Hey, welcome to the BAMF podcast. I am your host, Walt Robillard, because Mike Lafferty might have been kidnapped by aliens. Today, we are going to be talking about the Batgirling of DC, reboots and retcons, and what the big groups are doing to liven up their books. Today, we have an esteemed panel. We have Mr. Abe Smith. How are you doing, sir?
Not too bad, thank you.
And rocking and rolling the Mutants and Masterminds t-shirt, we have Mr. Steve Benson. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thanks.
And today we're looking at what we have going on with the big publishers of comics, especially superhero comics, and how they seem to be rebooting and trying to freshen up their brands. There was an article that we had seen not too long ago referencing the Batgirling of DC.
Hello, am I coming through?
Yes, hi. Is this Chris?
Yeah, it's me, apparently.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Not even less of a fan of Google than when I started, but thank you, it's good to be here.
Joining us, we have Christopher McLaughlin jumping into Google's for apparently the first time. I was a little strange when I saw you jump in. I thought you were just an observer there for a minute because it comes up as Matthew on the screen.
Well, I run under about 800 different pseudonyms. You know, I'm like Dale from King of the Hill. I'm Rusty Shackleford as far as the IRS is concerned. And
nice. Well, since you're here, did you want to give an opinion on the Batgirling of DC and how we and how the big two are livening up their brands?
Well, it's funny. This is a trend that the internet seems to have caught on a year after the fact. Because when we first broached this topic, the first thing that popped back in my mind was a piece that Rich Johnston did over at BleedingCool.com about how they were back when they first started showing their first signs of backing off of, hey, you worked for bankruptcy era Marvel? Hey, here's a check. And we're bringing in people like Justin Jordan and Charles Soule. And again, I apologize. I've met the man, and I still don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Bringing in people in there to liven up some of their less promising books, and that, you know, it's funny. It's something they've been doing for a while, but it didn't really seem to catch people's attention until the new Batgirl title came out. So it just seems to be the wave that's been going on for some time, but people have just noticed it. I guess now that it's about to crash on the shore or something. But believe me, I'm a fan. Not hiring bankruptcy era Marvel guys, that in and of itself is a good move. You know, I'm you're halfway to making me a fan. And the fact that it seems to be turning out some noticeably better books, well, hey, all the better for DC.
Do you think that some of the success of their TV brands and the way that they've made slight alterations is affecting this at all?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You're probably asking the wrong guy. I tried watching The Flash, and I lost interest when I realized that he's the only superhero whose ass I could kick. I really, you know, I mean, everything seems to be great about that show other than the teenage girl they seem to have hired to play The Flash. I just think Justin Bieber Flash was just not meant for me. And I literally own every single Barry Allen appearance. That's one of the great things you can do when you write comics and they're a tax write-off. And mm-hmm. I just sat there, every little thing about that show is perfect except for the main character, and I just can't get into it. And I tried out Arrow from seeing the 5 seconds that Arrow was in the Flash pilot, and I'll be honest with you, I just sat there for an hour going like, seriously, you're fucking kidding me. This is a show that people watch. This guy grunts for a solid freaking hour and just is all grim and grit. I mean, this is like a Bob Harris wank fantasy. I mean, I just can't believe that's a show that people watch. And again, if you guys love the show, I'm so sorry. You're a higher, better form of life than me. But I just, you know, I mean, I just like, where is the, who is this other than just, you know, like, you know, the guys who Christian Bale beat out to be the Nolan Batman? I just don't see Arrow, I don't see Ollie, I don't see anything I've liked or enjoyed about this character in the last 46 years, so To me, they're this new wave of DC. It's a wave of comics that doesn't inspire me with fear, loathing, and dread. So just me personally, they don't remind me of the TV shows at all.
As far as the Batgirling of DC, Steve, would you like to chime in?
Well, you know, I mean, it's, you know, Christopher was talking about, this people being kind of late to the party, and, you know, it's like, for me, retcons and reboots, you know, I'm an old comics fan, so it's 1985 all over again, you know. Ever since Crisis, you know, became a thing, you know, the major comics companies have been doing reboots and relaunches and reimaginings and re-everything with their titles in order to try and revitalize their sales or to, just generally, clean up their universe or try and attract the mythical new readers, all of that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, DC's take on it may turn out to be interesting. It's hard to tell. Their press release talks, you know, it's full of a lot of buzzwords and a lot of phrases, and it talks about, oh, well, story will be more important than continuity, that it's focusing, they use the word canon a lot, without really making it entirely clear what the distinction is between canon and continuity. So, I don't know. I mean, it could be interesting if the overall intention is that the DC books are going to be true more to the spirit of the characters and their history, which is lengthy and varied for most of them, and is going to worry less about, you know, the notion that they all have to weave together to form some kind of giant coherent universe, that could be all for the good. You know, I don't necessarily know that it's going to be any less confusing for readers, but on the other hand, I think Grant Morrison has it right that a lot of comics readers, especially a lot of kids, are not at all confused by the things that adult comics fans and comics creators think are confusing. Nerds like me are the ones who wonder about, you know, the particulars of where does Bruce Wayne, you know, buy his gas for the Batmobile? How come somebody doesn't trade that or something like that? You know, I mean, all of these niggling details. And most, you know, kids who read Batman are just like, it's awesome that he has a Batmobile. You know, and nobody cares what it runs on. It could be, you have a nuclear reactor in there for all they care. And you would tell them it had a nuclear reactor in there, and kids would be like, okay, awesome. It's even more cool, you know. So, I don't know. You know, it's another one of those, I oftentimes think that decisions that are driven by marketing, you know, in an attempt to improve a brand or create mass appeal or any of that sort of thing are often complete shots in the dark, as opposed to decisions that are based on the notion of creating good stories and good art and things that are, fun. And it remains to be seen whether or not this decision is one or the other or some mix of the two.
You know, in a strange way, it you could almost, if you were a cynical sort, look at this as sort of making a virtue out of necessity. I mean, the whole new 52 continuity has made no bloody sense from the day they started it. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the day that that Bruce Wayne's been Batman for 5 years and he's accompanied by his 10-year-old son. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in a way, it's almost they're throwing up their hands saying like, it doesn't make any sense to us anymore. Why should we even bother?
New 52 was strange because it, you know, in terms of reboots, it seemed to have learned no lessons at all from Crisis or any of the previous you know, reboots that occurred, even just DC's reboots. You know, one of Crisis as a reboot was that it was intended to simplify the DC universe, and in fact it did the exact opposite, because there was no, at least as far as, you know, I could tell from the reader's side of things, no coherent plan of what the universe was going to look like after Crisis. And some characters got massively revised immediately. Some characters just lingered and kind of carried or limped along with their pre-Crisis versions. Some characters just vanished into limbo, only to reappear completely different or not sometime later. And, you know, there was just a whole... And it seemed like as things went along, there were just all these various logic questions that it seemed like nobody had bothered to ask until all of a sudden they came up. Like, what are we going to do about the Legion of Superheroes? Oops. you know, and New 52 came off very like that in a lot of regards, in the sense that it was a somewhat more coherent setting, but it, you know, the common refrain was, now, you know, we don't even know what it is we know anymore, because the backstory of these characters hasn't been filled in many cases. Lots of the stories started, you know, in that, you know, oh, they've been around for 5 years or however long. But with very little detail about what those 5 years were like. And so there was like, well, do what I know pre-New 52 about this character, is any of it accurate? I don't know. Yeah. So I can see why it was confusing.
Abe, did you have thoughts on how this is going?
Well, I'm confused. Let's just say that it seems to be that the idea of bringing characters to new readers, but if you look at the June solicits after Convergence, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are all getting completely new looks, which is, so they're not immediately recognizable as their characters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
None of the new books to me seem to be anything that appeals to me as a new reader. It was like, I can't believe a new reader would pick them up, and to me, that pretty much knows these characters, most of them seem to be kind of odd choices and kind of slightly dubious takes on the characters I've previously seen before, and kind of, they just, like, I mean, like the new Constantine book seems like, oh yeah, you remember if you liked about John Constantine? Not anymore, hey! so that's kind of gone as well. But so the weird thing about the Batgirl thing, I mean, they had the recent furore about the cover for the variant cover for issue 40, mm-hmm. about the Joker mm-hmm. cover. And according to the write-up in that, Batgirl is now aimed at a female audience of 14 to 17-year-old girls. Now, so where does that leave me that been buying the previous 40 issues of it? they should have relaunched it as an issue one. They shouldn't have just considered a new, you know, a new. Oh yeah, by the way, this isn't your book anymore. And it just seems crazy. It just seems a bit odd to take something that's already pre-existing and just to completely alter its, you know, who you're aiming the book at without really kind of telling anybody about it. It just seems
I think you just nailed their corporate philosophy for the last 4 years. None of these books are yours anymore.
Well, that's right. The Starfire book, I mean, the Starfire book looked fantastic, but now seeing the cover of the Starfire book, it looks like it could be an advert for Barbie. It literally, it seems really such a weird take on the character. For something that previously, New 52 version, they were saying, well, she's too sexy, she's too this, that, and the other. And then you get a new book saying, hey, Starfire, but she's not the same character anymore. This is Barbie Starfire now. And it just seems really strange.
But you know, the fascinating thing about that is that even the notion nowadays that community, for lack of a better term, are somehow entitled to notification, you know, that somehow, because, you know, back in the day, you know, when publishers published, that's what they did. They put out books, and books would be canceled, or books would appear, books would change, creative teams would shift, And at most, you would find out about it in the next issue blurb. Next issue, completely new creative team. But now it's the notion that comic book fans have ownership of these characters and these books. And you hear things like, well, if you're going to change my book, you know, I think that I deserve some notice. You know, if you're going to decide that Batgirl is, you know, going to now target, you know, a tween girl audience, well, I think, you know, as a loyal Batgirl reader, I should be informed, you know, and in fact, that I should be able to weigh in on this decision. You know, and that's a strange new notion that has come about in fandom in relatively recent years, it seems to me, anyway. Now with the greater connectivity of the internet, fandom is more engaged, you know, in terms of, you know, just being able to, you know, be involved in all the things they think are awesome. But there's also this greater sense of it's ours, and you can't take it away from us. It doesn't really belong to you, when in fact, you know, at least legally, it does. You know, and DC can do whatever they want with their characters. You know, and we get to vote with our dollars and buy them or not. You know,
exactly.
But, you know, it's just, I find it fascinating, the investment in those things. And it's not just comics. It's seen in all kinds of media, you know, where fans, you know, fan communities are so reactive now. And now creators have to be so much more responsive to that.
Do you feel that this almost resembles the way that rabid sports teams are viewed by some of their fans? Like when you hear, for example, I'm in New England, so when you hear, you know, hey, the Patriots are going to be playing, everybody should get together so we can really support our team, and it's that our team, or when they talk about they win or lose a game, it's, oh, man, we lost that, not, you know, the Patriots lost that. Do you think that that has some similarity to that mentality?
I'm going to defer to my
sports analogy
because I'm one of the people like, who that analogy went right over my head. so, you know, sports, yes, sure.
Okay.
Is this landing in my lap by default? Patriots.
I think this might be your way, Chris.
Using your sports analogy, that's like, sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, using your sports analogy, the idea of changing Batgirl is virtually saying, okay, these, you want to see the Patriots? Yeah, they're not playing American football now, though. They're playing basketball. That would be, that's kind of, that's the way I see it.
Well, you know, I mean, I suppose that that you could make the argument that, you know, it is the fans that, you know, buy these comics, that go see these movies, that watch these TV shows, that buy the merch, that makes us, you know, give a darn about these characters one way or another. I mean, I certainly don't think that fans own the right to dictate to a creator what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But again, it just seems like the tip of a larger iceberg, the way that there is this great corporate cowardice about new projects. You know, mm-hmm. Because the thing that occurs to me about this new Batgirl relaunch is, what would people's reaction be if this had been Owl Girl? You know, they're doing these type of stories with this type of character. It's just a brand new character with no connection to what you saw in the previous 40 issues of Barbara Gordon. Well, there's only one thing you can count on: no one would buy it.
Yeah, true.
You know, I mean, I understand at some point J.J. Abrams made a great blow 'em up space extreme movie that people liked. My big objection to it was they called it Star Trek, because I said this is a lot of things, but it's not Star Trek. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, it just seems like anybody that wants to launch a new idea and do something creative, they're almost forced to glom it onto an existing property, no matter how ill-fitting the marriage may be. And frankly, I think the new Batgirl, I mean this is not a knock on Batgirl, you know, it's a, from what I understand, it's a dandy book, it's doing well, and God bless it, but you know, it just seems like there was no other way to get this idea made other than to make it Batgirl.
Well, and that's the challenge of finding, you know, new audience, you know, in an already hugely crowded market.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, on the one hand, it's you know, geek nirvana out there in the sense of the sheer wealth of, you know, gosh, which superhero TV show will I watch on my TiVo? You know, I don't think I have time, you know, in just one weekend to marathon all of the great superhero movies. I'll have to be more selective, not to mention, you know, just science fiction and fantasy and all of the other, you know, various geekery that's out there. I mean, there's a huge wealth of it. And, that's a tremendously challenging market to do something new in, especially when it's, you know, when it has to be, by definition, something that is new enough that it's going to get some attention, but not so new that it's threatening or weird, or at least, you know, it has to be in the right vein of weird that gloms enough weird people to it, you know, to form a community. So, you know, it's little wonder that a lot of creators are, to one degree or another, drawn to these existing properties, which oftentimes these creators love, you know, and are fans of and want to do right by. And it's, you get the whole confluence of a fan community that loves a property and the property owner to whom that property is a property. And its function, I mean, you know, as far as DC is concerned, their function of their characters is to make them money. You know, and I'm sure that, you know, everybody in the comics world, you know, loves their characters, but DC is not a charity, and neither is Marvel, and neither is any other publisher. Hmm. You know, they're out to put out products that people will buy. And so, you know, there's always been, and there always will be, at least, you know, so long as money is involved, a negotiation between, you know, commerce and art, as far as that goes. I mean, if you know, I had my, you know, could work my will, you know, we would have changed the copyright laws so that all of the Golden Age comics characters were in the public domain at this point, and everybody could be writing their Batman story however they wanted it, and giving it away if they want to, and remixing and doing all kinds of weird stuff, you know, with that. But, you know, again, these things aren't art to corporations. They're properties that they own that are valuable. Hmm.
Does anybody find it strange that we have the both universes relaunching at the same time, virtually?
Pretty close. I can't remember if that's ever happened before.
Yeah, usually one will do it, and then the other one will follow suit with a variation of it, and then it'll just keep bouncing back and forth. I don't know. I've been referring to it every time I talk about it as Secret Convergence, almost like calling it Bennifer or Grant. You know, it just
Secret
seems like
Crisis on Infinite Wars. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Although it will be interesting to see the end result of this Marvel thing. I mean, so far it just seems to be an excuse to publish a whole lot of comic books. I'll be very interesting to see if there actually is some kind of actual reboot once all this is said and done, or in the end it will change exactly as much as Secret Invasion and Civil War and all that sort of thing did for the long haul.
That's actually another interesting point, you know, in terms of looking at of the way we look at comics. Is the very notion that there is or should be an end result to any comic story, you know? I mean, because again, in the you know, sort of Silver Age era of comics, there was never, the only end result to a story was ever things worked out, and that was pretty much it. You know, I mean, occasionally things would change, but I mean, a change in the comics was huge. It was majorly significant, And now it's become the notion that these stories build on each other, that there's this continuous change, and that, you know, after you know, Secret Wars, after Convergence, after Flashpoint, after whatever, things will never be the same. Everything will be different. You know, after, you know, Court of Owls, Batman's universe will never be the same. You know, on and on and on. And that these stories have this sort of continual impact. And I think that's certainly a more adult, you know, view of storytelling, the notion that characters evolve and change and go through transformations as part of their story. But it's a very different, it is a significantly different way of looking from at comics than even the comics that I grew up on in the 70s and 80s, where things were relatively static, and really the entire arc of the comic was one story, you know, maybe a couple of issues, maybe three issues if we're going really crazy. And, you know, and that was it, you know, and everything, you know, story got to its peak and then back down and everything was back to where it was, and, you know, next issue.
The Marvel has this, like, seems to have this huge blueprint going on with how they're doing in Secret Wars. And if you look, every week they have a solicit for a new take on an old title, like Old Man Logan or some of the Hulk titles, or even like Age of Apocalypse. Do you guys feel that this is a smart marketing technique to connect fans to an older continuity and give them some perspective on these characters, but do it with fresh books that don't look so dated? Or is this just, like you were saying, Steve, an opportunity to put those characters to work and make more money?
Well, I'd say it worked on me. As soon as Inferno was announced, I that was it. That was the solicitation. That was when I'm having that. So that did the job. So, you know, those, you know, will it be the same glory days as the ones that were previously published? Who knows? But it's definitely got to be worth a try.
Chris, did you have an opinion on this?
Well, I don't know if it speaks to your question, and Hannah, I apologize that, but I just had something pop back into my head, and it somehow seems apropos. I wasted, however you want to look at it, over 30 years of my life watching professional wrestling with a fear that with a ferocity that, you know, has only ever matched my comic addiction, and one of the great wisdom that I have found that seems to have applied to every other creative endeavor is the greatest all-time professional wrestling manager, Jim Cornette, who also wrote scripts on the side, said, the thing about the wrestling audience is your entire audience cycles through every 5 years. And after 5 years, you're entitled to go back and redo all your most successful storylines because everybody that remembers that has moved on, and it's going to seem new and fresh to them. And
exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know if five years how much that applies to comics, but I think that we may be seeing this underlying principle at work.
Well, and that was comics held to for generations.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Let's say the new 52. The only reason people get up in a stink of it because we had the internet to tell everybody about it. Back in crisis times, the only people you might bump into were in the comic shop, and they might have the same opinion. Oh, I can't believe they're changing Batman again. Oh, no. But it wasn't as widespread. People just kind of got on with it and accepted it. And I think in 20, 30 years' time, when they redo it again, ready for the seventh relaunch of the Spider-Man Origin movie and all this kind of stuff, it will be exactly the same. So.
But one thing I wonder if ever will change, okay? You know, now that my Google rage has settled down, I want to make it clear that as a lifelong DC fan, I sort of forfeit my right to claim about reinventions of characters. Because there's almost no DC character that you can say has a definitive interpretation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you tell me that Michael Keaton is your Batman, and I'll see you and raise you Adam West. You know, their characters have been, their characters were so much, well, frankly, blander compared to Marvel's for so long. You know, it's like who's your Superman? You know, George Reeves, Christopher Reeves, or the guy from Man of Steel, which I'm sure no one has ever actually said, but we'll play along. Imagine somebody actually liked that take on Superman.
Well, you know, Dean Cain, of course.
Yeah, I mean, Dean Cain. You know, DC can keep reinventing these characters because very few of them have taken hold in the public's mind the same way that people would react if, you know, they put out a new Spider-Man book where Peter Parker was brutally murdering his enemies. You know, he just goes around snapping Doc Ock's neck and things like that. You know, the Marvel characters are just so much better defined in the public imagination. You're just not going to I don't think you're going to see quite ever that level of reinvention. And hey, if Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko came up with something that still works after 50 years, why change it? Insert joke about Fantastic Four reboot movie.
Well, yeah.
Don't hold back, Dave.
No, I still don't get it. Sorry. I still just think it's like, oh yeah, it's like we're doing a superhero movie. Let's put everyone in black costumes. Yay!
Well, you know,
I don't understand the mentality. I don't.
In my experience, the sheer list of reasons why creative decisions get made, you know, in especially when you're dealing with, you know, huge properties. And especially when you're dealing with something as big and contentious as a motion picture, you know, is just ridiculously large. You know, I mean, sometimes it's because people don't know any better. You know, sometimes it's because they just think it, you know, they literally are like, well, it, you know, it just makes more sense to me, and I'm the one who gets to make that call, so I'm going to do it. You know, decisions get made for all kinds of reasons. I mean, you know, the whole current split in Marvel's properties in terms of their film rights is one of the huge factors that's driving their, you know, storylines at this point. I mean, there's no way that the Inhumans would be such a huge factor in Marvel's current publishing plans if it weren't for the fact that they can't make X-Men movies for Marvel Entertainment.
Yeah.
Mm. You know,
3 Inhuman books in a month is astounding.
I agree with you 99%, but I also think there's got to be at least some small level of, hey, we got people to go see Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's see what else we got in the back of the closet.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, and I'm not saying that the Inhumans don't deserve their shot. I'm actually a big fan. You know, but I think that they would be further down the list if, you know, the, you know, School for Gifted Youngsters was still open filming.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, as far as that goes. And so there are all kinds of things that play into, you know, how these decisions get made. And it's bizarre, you know, the things that stick as far as that goes.
I had a question for Chris, please tell me that you have done backyard wrestling at some point and have video of that.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Well, okay, different sport, but my wife and I were once watching an NBA playoff game, and I was telling her back when I was in 6th and 7th grade, my dream was to be an NBA All-Star and play with my heroes Larry Bird and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and my wife, as she's prone to do, just said, "You're barely in good enough shape to watch basketball on TV." And I love her so much. I really, seriously. No kidding, no sarcasm. I have the best wife in the world.
Part of the article that really brought about this conversation was talking about the demographic that they're trying to reach through the characters are now being written by people that belong to that demographic. Do you think that that's having some impact on how these stories are being received?
You know, yeah. Honestly, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's an interesting theory because I was on a train ride back from Philly, which got extended by an extra 90 minutes because Amtrak, and I happened to have the Sean Howe book about Marvel, The Untold Story. Mm. And if you've read it, you know, by far the best part of that book is the insight that it gives you into the period when, you know, people like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and Stan Lee were going by the wayside, and the company was being taken over by people that had essentially achieved adulthood reading their stuff. And it was just sort of Stan and Jack company's stuff filtered through what these kids made out of it. And that's a very interesting theory to think about, you know, now the kids that were, you know, raised on, oh God, 90s comics. Am I timing that right? Or am I just frightened by the notion that anybody influenced by 90s comics is now writing books?
Yeah, terribly enough.
Ooh, yeah. All right, okay. I need to catch my breath that the kids who were buying polybagged comics are now the ones writing the books. But yeah, it's a very interesting theory, and I think there may be quite a bit of truth to that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Steve, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that there, you know, he has a point in that there probably is a grain of truth to that, you know, that generationally, you know, the influences, you know, from our, you know, comic reading childhoods find their way, you know, back into the work that, you know, professionals do now, you know, who are our contemporaries or even younger, who are now doing comics.
And to speak to that, do you guys feel that, for example, somebody like I was always, as evidenced by my posters behind me, I was always raised, or I came up a Marvel guy much more than DC. You know, for me was trades most of the time. But you feel characters like Cyborg, who according to the article, are now written by a person of color, or say let's look at Marvel and look at G. Willow Wilson, who's doing. Ms. Marvel. Do you feel that these characters need to be written by the embodiment of what they look like on the page and who they're supposed to be, or can the subject matter and who you're trying to portray, can anybody write these characters and be successful?
I think that it's important that there be a diversity of voices, you know, in any creative endeavor, especially a really big creative endeavor that wants to be inclusive and wants to have a large community. We've always wanted one degree or another to find reflections of ourselves in our, you know, our popular entertainment, you know, especially stuff that's heroic. You know, we want to look at, you know, our, you know, the big swath of heroes and go, oh, they're like me. You know, I mean, every kid wants that, you know, and I think to a certain degree every kid needs that. I think it's important that there be a range of voices in terms of you know, people from all kinds of backgrounds on the creative side. I don't necessarily think that they're limited to writing, you know, the old saw, write what you know, in the sense of you know, that a woman comics writer is only going to be able to write interesting female characters. You know, I would love for the day when she's inquired, oh, why do you write such great male characters? You know, wow, that's amazing. How do you do that? you know, likewise, I don't think that, you know, creators, you know, of color or, you know, from different ethnic and family backgrounds should be limited to writing those backgrounds. You know, I think that good writers can write characters of all different sorts, and the really great writers can write characters who are very unlike themselves, but still make them very convincing and very alive. I'm all for having lots more, you know, different people, you know, being able to express themselves creatively.
Chris or Aid, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think first and foremost, it always needs to be about the quality of the work. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your main obsession is the demographics that the author falls into, then I think you're more than missing the point. I mean, it should just come down to say, is it a well-written piece of work? Now, obviously, if you're going to try to diversify your publishing line, you know, as Steve says, write what you know. I think it's obviously a lot easier for somebody who's had like real life experience to write some of this stuff. But, you know, I mean, I think there are people who have lived lives and they have enough talent to where, you know, a lot of times you don't even, you completely forget about the demographics of the author. And, you know, you give it your best shot at the end of the day, says the token straight guy in Emerald City who had to write up the gay nightlife scene in Emerald City. Okay. They said, yes, we need you to write up the city's leading gay bar. And I said, you guys know that, like, most of the bars I grew up around have spittoons in them, right? Okay. So, you know, you give it your best shot, and, you know, no one, I haven't gotten any hate mail over this, and that's a first. But, you know, so, hey, you give it your best shot.
When we look at how these reboots are coming about, and how they're coming together. You have Marvel's, which seems very scripted and very almost like they're following a blueprint step for step for step. And then you got DC, which seems more sudden. Do you guys favor one approach or another? Do you feel like the slow build that Hickman has had through his New Avengers and his Avengers run and everything that he's doing now with Secret Wars and how he worked with Remender on some of their stuff, and then how DC is doing their, no, we're going to change it, kind of vibe almost. Do you prefer one over the other? Do you think that one over the other will be remembered more than another? Can you guys weigh in on that?
I think DC's approach seems to be scattergun approach. Chuck it all at the wall, see what sticks, drop whatever doesn't, carry on. Marvel stuff does definitely seem, well, I mean, what we've seen at the moment, they obviously with Secret Wars, they say a lot of these stories are going to be ongoing series. That probably won't last very long because ongoing tends to mean 12 issues, maybe at the very most. And like we've said before, we don't really know what the state of the Marvel Universe is going to be after Secret Wars. But there's nothing, I can't believe that back in, you know, in a year's time, 2 years' time, that this will be seen as like a new 52 reboot for DC. I just think it would be, oh, that's their time, they launched new books. And next year, next June, next September, there'll be more books out. And it will be like, oh, yeah, that happened last year as well. That'll be it. I don't honestly believe this is going to be a new thing. I mean, there was people on Bleeding Cool saying that the first appearance of Spider-Gwen in Spider-Verse was effectively the Silver Age Flash book of the modern generation. I can't see it. I cannot honestly believe that in 20 years' time, people could go, oh, yeah, Spider-Gwen, that was the first of the new, you know, the new era of whatever we're going to call it. I don't know what you call it after Bronze Age and Modern Age and stuff, you know, Diamond Age, I don't know what you call it. Anyway, but no, I think DC's is just going to be just one of another series of reboots. Marvel's, we don't know yet because we've not seen the solicitations for what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm guaranteed whatever Marvel does, it'll be, you know, mostly influenced by movies. We'll have to have Cap will be back, Thor will be back, Iron Man will be back in his same old suit, you know, Coulson will be running around, whatever. But yeah.
As far as comics go, we've pretty much gone into some depth in regards to how this is being seen and how we feel about it. I for one still want to see backyard wrestling video of Chris, but that's okay. I'll have to get over.
It's about 10 seconds of action, and then the rest of it's all the paramedics.
Most of us are playing around in the superhero genre as it pertains to role-playing games, and I just wanted to take a minute to talk about some of the stuff that we have going on. For example, Jason Tondreau, who couldn't be here today, is going to be launching soon the Supervillains Handbook, which I'm sure the guys at Marvel and DC will grab immediately. As it details the construction of the different personalities and roles that supervillains play in comic book media and how you can play those in your game table. But I think that as far as diversity is concerned and what we're seeing in the demographics and how you handle reboots and retcons at your table, you definitely have an amazing resource in Icons A through Z. Can you give us a quick rundown of A through Z and where we are now? And before I let you take the reins and do what you do best, please tell me there's going to be a collected hardback edition with all sorts of craziness going on.
Well, collected certainly. I don't know what its final format will look like, but definitely once it's all said and done, I definitely want to collect them all into a book. So Icons A to Z is my way of getting out some content for Icons, providing some additional support, working out some various ideas and the like by doing a every 2 weeks electronic supplement for the game that's available on DriveThruRPG and RPG Now. That's basically just, you know, each letter of the alphabet gets 6 pages of material, whatever topic I can pretty much jam into that letter of the alphabet. It just, you know, happened to work out pretty well in terms of you know, every 2 week release being 26 and working from there. So, so I've done all kinds of topics from, you know, doing A is for Aliens and working our way up through F is for Fear, which is the latest release, which got into a bunch of fear powers and how to do a more fleshed out approach to intimidation in the game, and how to do, you know, I'm the scary vigilante type character in more detail, how to handle fear and all of its related things as qualities in the game, and those sorts of things. Golden Age is coming up next for G, and is much less game system intensive than some of the others, and is much more of an overview of the genre, talking about how some of the elements can interplay with a lot of the stuff in Icons, and pretty much all the way up through the rest of the series for the rest of the year. It's been a fun project. It's for good or ill, you know, about as much as I can do for Icons at this point. In terms of my own creative output, given my other responsibilities, so it's been fun to be able to keep up with it, to have a regular Icons release out there on a regular basis. I learned my lesson from several years of doing electronic releases for Mutants and Masterminds with Green Grenade, that it's a great way for to get some content out there on a regular basis and to do some new stuff. And a lot of these things are small topics that, you know, only amount to, you know, a 6-page article, you know, and aren't on their own enough to do a, you know, a giant product on. But taken together, I think they make a nice little collection.
Do you if you ended up with somebody using one of your articles as a blueprint for a new comics title or to refresh an old one, which book would you most like to see the credits roll in?
Oh, gosh. I guess if anybody for some reason found something of mine they wanted to use, you know, in an actual comics title, I'd probably be, you know, very flattered for almost anything, you know, as far as that goes. I'm still a big, you know, DC guy, so, you know, a lot of any of the big DC characters, Wonder Woman certainly would be pretty awesome. I was just looking at Darwin Cook's interpretation of Wonder Woman from New Frontier, which I dearly love, you know, thinking about just how well Darwin Cook's sort of Silver Age-y kind of animated style would actually make him a terrific Icons artist if I ever had money.
So that's a shout out. When he gets a chance, he should hit you up.
Yeah, Mr. Cook, if you happen to be watching this, you know, by all means, drop me a note and, you know, we'll talk. I can find out just how far outside my league you are.
I'll see if I can tag him on Twitter. Maybe we can get him. Maybe we can, since we name dropped him, we'll get him to watch this.
I love his work. So, you know, I mean, and he's, you know, a ton of artists whose work I adore.
Chris, what are you working on currently in the RPG arena, and will you be putting a wrestling spin on that as well?
I haven't watched a minute of it in 10 years. I got out when it got all murdery, so I couldn't tell you. Although, if you want to go back in my back catalog, I do get a credit on the WWE role playing game. Because I got to explain the rules of wrestling, if you can believe that. I think I almost forfeited a college degree doing that.
It's like White Wolves.
We put that out through Comic Images, who were doing WWE card game at the time. And somebody sent me a link the other day. Apparently, there's like a 20-minute YouTube video mocking our design, where a guy just mocks every aspect of the production from start to finish. I've heard some of the criticisms were point on, but me with my massive comic collection, just want to take this guy aside and say, you've wasted your life, son. You've wasted your life. But anyway, again, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying, you know, of all the things that you could spend 20 minutes deconstructing, you know, human sex trafficking, the regime in North Korea, and he goes after this decade-old role-playing game. You know, aim high, dude. Aim high. Okay, but anyway, the present. Working on two things. Because of assholes who make ransomware, I'm writing my part of Hero High over again. And yeah, Lucian Solbon has made one of the best RPG books ever written even better, and he roped me into being a part of it. But I will publicly admit that writing alongside Lucian, you know, I feel like this is the Dukes of Hazzard, and I'm Coy and Vance. You know, I really just don't even feel like I belong in the conversation with Lucian Solbon. But I don't know what it is. You know, Eminem just seems to bring the best out in people. I get to work with Lucian Solbon. Steve Kinson lets me play with all his cool toys. You know, and that, you know, so yeah, I mean, just wow. Okay, all right. Don't gush. Okay. The other thing I'm doing is we're going to be back in the weekly PDF villain game here at Ronin, and we're putting out the magnificently titled, and I think this comes from Steve too. Well, I'm going to give him credit anyway till he tells me different. Rogues Gallery. So yeah. it's going to be me cranking those out, and I'm also bringing in some help. There's a guy I can't reveal his name, but it rhymes with Aid Smith, who's going to be helping me out on the project, and some other cool people like Darren Bulmer are going to come aboard and toss in some villains. And gosh, you know, I mean, I've been begging them for 10 years. Please just let me go off and make villains, and now I got my wish. So having a good time with that.
Steve, did you want to tell us a little bit about the Rogues Gallery?
Well, I mean, you know, Chris has really got the reins as far as that goes, you know. But it's you know, I mean, it's a getting back to basics, you know, thing for Mutants and Masterminds. You know, the one mainstay of, you know, superhero role playing games is villains to fight, and you pretty much can never have too many. As far as that goes, so ever since he's had the opportunity to come up with some of the more colorful villains of the, you know, Earth Prime universe, Chris has been, you know, eager to do more of the same, and you know, this was a great opportunity to you know, basically let him loose as much as we dare, as far as that goes.
Otherwise, you end up with a supervillain that looks like the wrestler Ric Flair and has a feather boa that acts like Marvel's Medusa. Yeah, I got you. Hey, did you want to say what your part is in of dealing with the Rogues Gallery?
I've just come up with a few ideas at the moment, so hopefully we will see if any of them take hold and get developed. But yeah, I've got a few ideas on the boil, so.
And RPG wise, what are you working on at the moment?
Mostly art and layouts, pretty much, for most stuff. So little jobs here and there. Nothing major at the moment. I'm still trying to get my Western book, genre book for Mutants Masterminds that I'm self-publishing myself completed, which is still in the year in production, so that will make it done. But I have something else that I may do as well, which is a something for Fate, so we'll see if that takes hold as well. So.
Right on. Steve, before we sign out and call it a podcast, you have a release showing up on Monday, yes?
Yes. In addition to the regular every other week A to Z release, we've got a new Icons adventure from Dan Houser called Urban Jungle that features the villain the Creeper, who's in the appendix of the assembled edition book, and it's a classic tale of a villainous plot that actually achieves all of its goals, and then things start to go off the rails. Dan's put together a fun story that is should be a definite evening's entertainment for a group who's looking for a fun villain tries to take over the city type of story with a twist to it.
Excellent. So we'll make sure that everything that was discussed we're going to throw in the show notes once this posts. And then when Mike is released from his Alien Overlords, we can put that in the audio as well. I just wanted to thank the panel for coming out today and talking about comics. I'm big fans of everyone here, and I can't say it enough. Thank you very much for taking an hour of your time and coming down and putting some thoughts out there for the masses.
No pleasure.
No problem.
And my name is Walt. I am covering for, once again, the hostage-held Mike Lafferty. we're sending NASA, and maybe Aid can loan us some six guns from his Western adventure to rescue him later. And we're going to say we're out. Thank you.